You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Well, we've got Jim Wilson standing by to talk about Lyme disease, latest advances or lack of progress, depending on your point of view with that. First, I want to hear from Maria calling from Scarborough, who wanted to comment on some of the things I was saying about leadership contenders, I believe. What's up, Maria?
No, I'm actually talking about the energy. Why is there always a problem in the energy ministry? What about that lady who walked away with quite a bit of money about 4 or 5 years ago after messing things up? What is wrong with this ministry?
I think there's something wrong with a lot of ministries.
Well, they didn't provide all the papers in the first place.
They what? Sorry?
They didn't provide all the papers.
Oh, you're talking. Yeah, no, they didn't. They didn't.
I mean, what is wrong with this ministry? It needs looking into.
Well, nothing's going to get looked into now.
Good grief.
You know that. We're in prorogation.
Yeah, I know.
How do you feel about that?
I am upset about it, but something needs to be done about the energy ministry.
Something needs to be done. All right, Maria, thanks very much. Yeah, I don't think it stops there necessarily. We have to be vigilant about all branches of government, and both provincially and federally. I'd like to welcome back to Zoomer Radio on the line Jim Wilson, the president of the Canadian Lyme Disease Foundation. Jim, it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
You were kind enough to share with me some recent correspondence you've had with Public Health Ontario. I'd like you to translate it for us mere mortals so we can gauge what this latest information really means.
Well, we had sent to us a draft copy of a new guideline that's going to be implemented in November, according to the document. And it is announcing that the implementation of the C6 peptide test...
Well, hang on now. Don't pretend that we don't know anything about this, Jim. A lot of people out there, unless they're suffering from this terrible disease, won't really know what you're talking about. So I'd like you to dumb it down a bit for us so we can grasp what's going on, okay?
Right. If somebody suspects Lyme disease, there are certain blood tests that are performed in Canada, and there's a protocol.
Yeah.
And the initial test is referred to as a screening test. Up until recently, we've used what's called an ELISA-type screening test, which was found to be quite inaccurate.
Yeah, not very reliable. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we were quite happy when we seen this, that they're using an improved ELISA, which is called the C6 peptide assay.
So this is a better test.
It's a better test because it will pick up more species and strains of the Lyme bacteria.
Which is Borrelia, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Right. However, what they've done is they're using the screening test, so that's step one.
Yeah.
Then if you get a positive or indeterminate screening test, they will confirm that result with a second test called a Western blot.
Yeah.
And so they're using now, implementing this C6 peptide, which should pick up more cases of true Lyme disease.
Well, that's good as far as it goes then, yeah.
Well, except that all of those new positive cases that they're going to pick up are now being screened again by this Western blot.
And the Western blot, how dependable is that?
Well, it's still, to our knowledge, and we haven't got any answers stating otherwise, the Western blot in Canada is still only one strain of one species. So it's still Borrelia burgdorferi, strain B31. So you're
and how many strains are there out there?
Well, there's several in Canada, and that research has been published by John Scott, Fergus, Ontario researcher. It's been published by the Public Health Agency of Canada. We've got several species and strains.
Okay, but Western blot is only good for Borrelia burgdorferi.
strain B31.
All right, well, okay, if you say B31. Well, yeah. So in other words, it's not nearly wide enough to pick up all the Lyme disease cases.
No, and it negates the benefit of using the C6 peptide.
Which is a better test.
Right, and so it makes no sense to introduce a better test and then apply the same limited test to confirm it, whether it's an accurate, a true positive or a false positive.
Yeah, so you have a pretty good test capability with the C6 peptide, and then to make sure that it's right, you use an inferior testing method that may give you a wrong result.
Exactly, and that's our point. And also included in this document, it reinforces the gathering of clinical data for the lab technician. So in other words, if you go in for a standard blood test,
yeah,
your doctor doesn't provide the lab with your lifestyle or your history. They just do a lab rec for your blood test.
That's right.
With Lyme disease, they want your history. They want to know where you've been, what your history is.
Right, right.
They want clinical data on you, because what they're using is an algorithm, mathematical algorithm, called the pretest probability ratio, to determine whether that positive blood test is a true positive or a false positive.
Well,
what the pretest probability ratio is.
You're doing that again to me, Jim. You're doing that again to me. You're leading us off into the weeds, and I don't know what the heck you're talking about.
Well, let me try and explain it.
Well, let me ask a couple of dumb questions, and maybe we can clear it up.
All right.
Does an ordinary general practitioner know all of this stuff and know enough about it to be able to order a blood test with that necessary information? The answer would seem to be no.
And it's exactly no. And it's impossible for the doctor to have that information, because the whole notion of pretest probability is based on the province having knowledge of every square kilometer as to where ticks are
and where they're not
going to be on any given day.
As if anybody were tracking them, right?
Right.
So in other words, what Public Health Ontario was sharing with you, is that now going to be public health policy in Ontario? How chiseled in stone is this policy?
Well, it's going to be embedded into the guidelines that dictate how Lyme disease testing is done. And so, yes, it is going to be carved in stone.
So we've suddenly taken a step for the worst, because of the way we're now combining these two tests. Obviously, these are people at Public Health Ontario who apparently, they don't know what they're doing? I mean, you could be forgiven for thinking that, couldn't you?
you could, but I don't want to, presume...
Yeah,
their intentions, but all we can do is offer our input, and CanLyme has experts on four continents that we deal with, and we seek advice from, and this is just bad policy, plain and simple.
What about other provinces? How can you compare what they're doing as opposed to what Ontario's doing?
It's pretty well one mindset Canada-wide,
right.
And because the policy is dictated to by what's called the Canadian Public Health Laboratory Network, and so it's each province is represented in that, and the policy is pretty much dictated by that group, and that group are under the Public Health Council of Canada,
right.
Which is another layer.
Another layer again, yeah.
Right, and it's a secretariat under the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Right. Well, that doesn't sound very hopeful in terms of getting the right message out. Are there no champions within healthcare who are saying to some of these authorities and experts, hey, you guys are not getting this right. You're not either not paying attention or you're not studying it carefully enough?
There are champions within healthcare, but they are very quickly ignored or stomped on.
Well, we're still laboring under that old misconception that really Lyme disease is not a problem in Canada, right?
Right.
It always seems to come back to that.
And they make that assumption based on no data.
Yeah.
So they haven't done the necessary field work. It's Canada's a big place. Ontario's a huge place.
Yeah.
It's the perfect environment for ticks to survive. Right across your border, you border the U.S. states that have the highest rates of Lyme disease in North America. That's where your migratory birds come from.
Yeah.
So for a doctor to have enough accurate information to try and predetermine, or for the lab tech to have enough information to try and predetermine whether that positive blood test on that patient is a true or false positive, it's impossible.
Then what is a person who suspects they might have Lyme disease supposed to do? Just a mere mortal thinking, how do I get the best health care for me, or the best test, or the whatever, because they're having trouble because of simply a lack of information and knowledge?
Well, contact the Canadian Lyme Disease Foundation for starters.
Yeah.
And we can certainly direct them to better testing. And it's interesting to note that we sent a written request to one of the manufacturers of the kits the government uses to test for Lyme disease, asking them why they're not using a broader-based test. Why are they only using Borrelia burgdorferi B31?
Oh, I see. All right.
And their answer to us was that they're limited as to what they can put in it by the United States Center for Disease Control.
Oh.
And they recommended, for broader testing, to use a test in a lab in Northern California. And this is the lab that we send people to because we've now got 9 years of very good history with them.
Well, and this is the test known as the C6 peptide test?
Well, that's one of them.
They
can do that. This is the other problem with this lab guideline, is it's further reducing the options because it's also got in there that they are not going to accept tissue or fluid for culture of the bacteria.
Well, what does that mean?
Culturing the bacteria out of tissue or fluid is considered the gold standard.
That's really what you need to do, yeah.
And that's going to determine it 100%.
All right. I'm talking to Jim Wilson. He's the president of the Canadian Lyme Disease Foundation, talking about the fight against Lyme disease.
Gold Hawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.
We're talking about Lyme disease in Canada, something we do from time to time as we try to explore different ways that people who have the disease can get treatment or even confirmation through a reliable test. And Jim Wilson, may I say, it's been an uphill battle all the way, has it not?
Well, it's the first Lyme society formed in Canada was formed in 1889.
Good grief.
That's when the first group of patients wanted their voice, you know, heard and interjected into the policy on Lyme disease. And here we are in 2012, still
arguing some of the same things, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I got a lot of callers here, Jim. Let me put some of them on the radio. Here's Sally calling from Goderich. Sally, do you have a question for Jim Wilson?
Yes, I was just wondering, do you know if they found Lyme disease up in the Goderich area?
I don't know. Jim Wilson, do you have any specific information about Goderich area?
That's just it. There
isn't really.
There's very little published data, and they would really need to have field researchers go there and do field studies, which would take at least 2 years.
Yeah.
Have there been human cases that we're aware of in the Goderich area? Yes.
There have been in the Goderich area, in the Bruce Peninsula area. Why are you asking that, Sally?
Well, I didn't have my glasses on. I dug an object out of my knee. It turned out to be a tick.
Yeah.
And 5 days later, I woke up, and my knees, my shoulders, and my neck were on fire. I hardly could get out of bed. And I'm just very, very frustrated with the symptoms and the lack of medical knowledge around what's going on. And to me, it's cause and effect. To me, I dug out this tick. I had not much of a rash, but I had a bit of a rash.
Yeah.
And but 5 days later, I was tremendously symptomatic. And
you can't, I'm assuming you can't find a doctor who really knows what's going on.
Correct.
Yeah.
They did the tests, and then I did my own little bit of research, and it showed that Lyme disease testing was 30% accurate.
Yeah.
And there's false positives, false negatives.
Yeah, depending on what test is used. And Jim Wilson, do you have some advice for Sally?
Well, I would, certainly be as insistent as you possibly can with your physicians that you need antibiotics, and you need them as soon as possible, because what you've just described is exactly how Lyme disease presents itself.
Yeah.
And the majority of people that we're aware of do not get the telltale bullseye rash, so which doctors sort of have imprinted in their heads by their research or by their educational material that's all they think that's almost required for a diagnosis of Lyme disease, when in fact it occurs in less than 50%, and the actual bullseye itself occurs in only 9%.
Sally, did you have that, a bullseye rash around the...
No.
No, you didn't.
No, what I did, actually, I had liquid oil of oregano with me, so I dropped that on the spot immediately, and so I just had a bit of a rash, but not the bullseye rash, and I still have rash, and that was about 6 weeks ago. What I did, a bit tricky, but I went to a different doctor, said I had a bladder infection. She gave me antibiotics.
To get some antibiotics.
I got just to get antibiotics in my system.
Man.
So I'm just wondering, do I need to get another round of antibiotics, perhaps?
Jim?
Well, I don't know what antibiotic and what dose or anything. And really what you do need to be doing is sitting down with a doctor and discussing that, because... the right antibiotic over a long enough period of time is at the right dose is really the key. And unfortunately, also in our guidelines somewhere that our medical doctors go to when they're looking for information on Lyme disease, somewhere in there somebody decided that 2 weeks of antibiotics at a specific dose was enough to cure early Lyme disease.
Well, it's laughable, isn't it? Yeah.
When in fact, that's just not the case. In fact, treatment failure is very high at that short a period and at the dosages that they're recommending. So if it were me, myself, or my children, I would want a minimum of 6 weeks of antibiotics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Sally, I hope that advice helps, and we'll give out the... have you been to the Canadian Lyme Disease Foundation website?
No, but I will go there, and I'd be
just
more
for
than
some background information. Yeah,
to do anything I can to get the field research done.
Yeah,
because I think it's endemic, it's epidemic, and I think people really need to be made aware of it. I really thank Mr. Wilson for being on the program this morning, and for anybody to go through what I've gone through. I mean, it was fairly well normal before this, and it just rendered me, my muscles are so weak. It's very, very frustrating. You know, it's a complete change of lifestyle.
I can hear,
that.
Yeah. Sally,
prognosis is not good, I'm sure.
Well, keep up the fight. Go to that website. We'll tell you how to get there. It's pretty easy, actually. If you put Canadian Lyme Disease Foundation right in Google, you pop right up. Here is Barbara calling from St. Catharines. Barbara, do you have a question?
Yes. My granddaughter travels between the States and Canada. Her mother lives over there. Her father lives here. He's my son.
Yeah.
And that she got a tick, and that one did not get a passport. Yeah. We're not sure where she got it, whether she got it here or she got it over there. But I took her to the prompt care here in the city, and they took it off. And the reaction to the doctor on charge there was, "Oh well, we won't do anything about it. It doesn't happen much over here." A few weeks later, she got very, very sick. And my daughter-in-law rushed her to the hospital over in Niagara Falls, New York.
Yeah.
And they started her on antibiotics, did some tests, and then 2 days later came back. It was Lyme disease.
Yeah.
Now, she was treated, and I think it was close to 6 weeks' worth of antibiotics.
But that was treated in the U.S., yeah.
Yeah. My question is, will this come back on her in future life?
Well, what are the Jim Wilson, I know you're not a doctor, but I also know you have a lot of background information. What can you say about that question?
It's impossible to determine what her future is. There are a number of treatment failures at the shorter time frames of treatment.
Yeah.
There are also treatment successes at it. So my personal opinion is that why risk the treatment failure when by adding a few extra weeks of antibiotic treatment you can greatly reduce that risk of treatment failure? Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the rule of thumb I go by, and that's from, you know, being actively involved in the community and listening to hundreds and hundreds of people each year.
Can the bacteria kind of remain resident in your body showing no symptoms and then come back, flare up at a later time?
Yes.
It can.
That's been shown to occur.
Yeah. Jim, thank you very much for being with us. I'm totally out of time here, up against the news, but once again, thanks very much. And Barbara, thanks very much for telling
your
story as well.
Thank you.
Good information. Okay. Bye-bye.
Gold Hawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.